Chapter 6, page 40, Books of Elsewhere. Olive froze. She could hear the wind creaking through the bare branches. Patches of moonlight fell onto the white path at her feet. The gravel on the path poked sharply through her favorite stripy blue socks. She looked over her shoulder. Behind her, a frame floated in mid-air, holding a smallish painting of the upstairs hallway. Olive stuck her hand back through the frame and wiggled it around, just to make sure. A snapping sound and the rustle of dry leaves came from the thick patch of trees ahead. Looking back once or twice at the glowing square of hallway, Olive set off along the path. At first she went cautiously, but soon her heart settled into an excited beat, like a snare drum in a marching band. Olive almost giggled out loud. It was the kind of giggle someone makes when she's playing hide-and-seek and none of the other kids can find her, even though they've walked past her hiding spot four times. High over Olive's head, black branches rattled. The full moon in its oily navy sky tossed bony shadows over the path. "Hello," Olive called. "I know you're here." There was a rustle from the cluster of shrubs some distance off the path to the right. "I'm not going to hurt you," she promised, moving closer. The shrubs gave a terrified squeak. "You can come out," she whispered. "Really?" The shrubs were quiet. Olive stepped forward and pushed apart the prickly branches. A little white figure inside gave another squeak and rolled itself up into a ball. "Look," said Olive. "I'm not anything to be scared of." "Oh," the ball said, and began to unroll itself. When it had unrolled completely, Olive saw that it was actually a boy with a large, round face, a very small body hidden in a white nightshirt that was several inches too long. From the top of his round head, pale hair tufted in all different directions, he looked a bit like a tiny, unthreatening scarecrow, the kind that birds end up using as a convenient porch. "I'm Olive." "I'm Morton." The scarecrow held out a small, grubby hand. Olive shook it solemnly. "Are you lost?" she asked. Morton slowly shook his head. "No. He brought me here, and then I couldn't get out." "Who brought you here?" "The bad man," Morton whispered. "What do you mean, the bad man?" Morton squinted up at Olive, his round face catching a beam of moonlight. "Everybody knows the bad man." "Do you mean the boogeyman?" asked Olive. "Because he's only in your imagination, you know." Morton shook his head so hard he almost fell down. "Everybody knows him." He looked up at Olive reproachfully. Olive sighed. "Well, I don't know what you're talking about, so why don't you tell me?" Morton crossed his arms over his baggy white nightshirt. "I was in my bed," he said very slowly, as if Olive might not understand simple sentences. "And then I heard him." "The bad man?" Olive interrupted. Morton glared at her and then nodded. "He was in the garden," Morton continued, "and he was talking, and I got out of my bed, and I went across the grass, and I watched him, and he was mixing things, and he was talking to a cat, and the cat talked back." Inside Olive's head, two little puzzle pieces went click. She held her breath, and she waited for Morton to continue. "I made a noise," Morton went on. "The man looked up and he saw me, and he said, 'Come here, boy. I have something special to show you.' He said I could help him. He said I would be the very first one." "The very first what?" whispered Olive. Morton shrugged. "I don't remember. I didn't want to go with them, but my feet went anyway. We went into this house, and then—" Morton shook his head like somebody shaking a magic eight ball to make the next words appear. "Then we both went into the forest, I think. And then the man said, 'Goodbye, boy. Don't wait for them to find you.' And then he left." Morton looked down at the hem of his nightshirt. "And then I was by myself." A cold feeling rippled up Olive's back and across her scalp. "Let's go out here," she said, glancing over her shoulder. "Right now." She held the branches of the shrubs apart. Morton crawled through. They stood up together, and in those few minutes the moon seemed to have moved. Thicker shadows filled the forest, leaving the ground, and the path submerged in a deep pool of black. Olive looked around. "I'm not sure which way to go," she admitted. Morton, whose head reached the level of Olive's elbow, sidled closer. "I never know which way to go," he said. "Well, all we need to do is find the path," said Olive. "That should lead us out of here." Olive took a few steps in one direction, with Morton trailing after her like a broken kite. There was no path to be seen. Olive turned and headed in the opposite direction. Nothing. Olive squinted into the growing darkness, looking for a spot that she had passed before. A tree, a stone, anything, but nothing looked familiar. "That's funny," she said. "I can't remember which way I came." "He's watching us," Morton whispered. "He won't let us alone." The back of Olive's neck prickled. She spun around, searching the shadows under the shifting branches. She didn't see anyone, but she felt quite sure that Morton was right. Somebody was watching them. Olive looked down at Morton's round, terrified face. "We'll be okay," she said, hoping her voice sounded surer than she felt. "I promise." Nearby, a dry twig snapped, and in the silence, the sound traveled like a firework. Olive and Morton froze in their steps. There was another sound, the rustle of something moving through the underbrush. Olive crouched, pulling Morton close, keeping her eyes wide open in the shadows, and she saw the glitter of something green. "Horatio, is that you?" she whispered. A furry shape with green eyes emerged from the darkness. It paused, looking at Morton, and then Olive. And finally, it gave a long, aggravated sigh, shook its head, and moved quickly to the left. "Follow the cat," cried Olive, bounding for Horatio. But Morton had planted his feet. "That's the cat, the one that talked." "I know he talks," said Olive. "I think he's going to show us the way out of here. Now come on." Morton shook his head so hard, this time he did fall down. "Morton, hurry," Olive begged, yanking at Morton's hand. But Morton sat on the ground like an anchor. "No," he said, "I am not following that cat. His name is Horatio, and he said he would be keeping an eye on me. He's trying to help us. Get up." "I don't have to do everything you say, and you can't make me." "What?" Olive spluttered. "You have to do what I say, because I'm the boy." Olive dropped Morton's hand, put her fist on her hips. "How old are you?" 9. "Well, I'm 11, so come on. I'll be 10 in June." "It is June." "No, it isn't." "Yes, it is." "It's April," said Morton stubbornly. The last strip of Olive's patience dried up. "Look," she growled, dropping to her knees so that her nose nearly touched Morton's. "I'm going with the cat. You can stay here forever all by yourself, or you can come with me. Now." With his mouth squished into a pout, Morton stood up and Olive shook his hand. Morton shook her off. This time, Olive grasped his wrist and didn't let go. Horatio had paused for them, but the moment Olive and Morton were on their feet, he was flying through the underbrush. They scrambled along behind his furry silhouette, hopping over fallen trunks, pushing through bushes. When they reached the pale stones of the path, the cat broke into a run. Morton and Olive hurried behind, and they left the thick cover of the forest, and the moonlight fell over them, lighting their way. Olive could see the orange hue of Horatio's fur glowing ahead of them. And still running, she turned to glance over her shoulder and had to swallow a scream. They were being followed, and no matter how fast they ran, Olive did not see how they could get away.